Good morning. It's time for the Clay County Corner, coming to you live from the historic Clay County Courthouse in Salina, Tennessee. For the next hour, the Clay County Corner will inform you of what's happening in our community. Sit back and enjoy the program.
Everyone, I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome everyone in here to the, once again, to the Clay County Corner, where we come to you live and in living color. You're on your radio dial. This is kind of a new this morning. We have moved our radio station set up over into another room, and so we're going to get used to that a little bit, but Mr. Kevin Dawson's coming on here in a few minutes, and we're going to just do a little rundown on some things going on here in and around with us here at the radio station, here at the old courthouse, some of the things happening around. So we'll be doing that here in a few minutes. Until then, of course, we'd like to welcome everyone in here to the Clay County Corner, where we come to you live and in living color on your radio dial here each Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. And we're grateful that you tune us in and tell your friends and neighbors about us. And hopefully we can have a good time here for the next hour and get some useful information out. And we've got quite a few things going on here in the county and the city and around, and we'll be talking about some of those. And we've got some just lots of various things fixing to happen. We've got a big celebration coming up the first weekend in August, and we've got some more things. But right now we want to, of course, thank the people that make this show possible, that being the three-star committee, Clay County Chamber of Commerce, and those special sponsors that participate to make this show possible here each Thursday morning. And we want to remind everyone that if you'd like to be a sponsor on this radio show, you know, just give a call up to the main office up in Tompkinsville, and we can get you set up and get your advertising word out to the folks here in the county. And with that, we'll take a little short break, and we'll be back just in a few minutes.
Salina Lumber Company gives you the convenience of a big box store with its thousands of items, but with a small town feel. At this family-owned home improvement store, they treat you like family. They have thousands of items in stock and can order so much more upon request. Their departments include appliances, automotives, building materials, cleaning supplies, doors and windows, electrical, farm and ranch, fasteners, hand tools, hardware, heating and cooling, lawn and garden, lighting, lumber, mowers, outdoor living, outdoor power equipment, paint, pet supplies, plumbing, power tools, sporting goods, store supplies, and tools. Many name brands and products are stocked at Salina Lumber Company, located at 1223 Mitchell Street in Salina, Tennessee. They're open on Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m., and closed on Sunday. That's Salina Lumber Company, 1223 Mitchell Street in Salina, Tennessee.
Let's face it, we are not the most patient people on earth. We've become accustomed to having instant solutions to most any need. Macon Bank and Trust now offers an instant solution for your spending needs with Card at Once, an instant issue MasterCard debit card. Come in, open your account, and walk out with your new debit card. No waiting. Macon Bank and Trust, member FDIC, and equal housing lender. Come grow with us.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness, with a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists. They serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skill, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
Tri-County Electric offers our member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
What is a quitter? A person who gives up easily. The thought of quitting tobacco products might seem hard, but it's not impossible. With the help of the Tennessee Tobacco Quitline Program, you will have a quit coach, personalized support, and even free nicotine replacement therapy for eligible participants. Tobacco users that enroll in Tennessee Tobacco Quitline Program have access to specially trained tobacco quit coaches who will work with you to develop a personalized plan for quitting tobacco and provide you with ongoing support along the way. So you will become a quitter, a person who does not give up easily. And once you become a quitter, within minutes of having your last cigarette, your body begins a series of changes that provide immediate health benefits, like reduced heart rate. If you or someone you know wants to quit using tobacco, call the Tennessee Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW. That's 1-800-784-8669. This message is brought to you by Clay County Anti-Drug Coalition. This project is funded under a grant contract with the State of Tennessee Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services.
Good morning, everyone. Once again, we're back here. Mr. Kevin Donson just made it in here with me, but before we get started on that, I just had a notification from City Mayor Luke Collins, who is also, of course, a landowner here in Salina, and he has a well there on his place, and he wanted to get a message out to all the folks here within the city limits of Salina that are using well water, that he had his well water checked, and it came back positive for some problems, and it said that the people who are using well water within the city limits, that he was told that the water in his well was not fit for human or animal consumption at this time. So might be advised to, you know, if you are using well water, to take precautions, and before you use it, I guess boil it or you know, get your well checked if you need to, whatever you need to do. But he was quite concerned about this because we know, so you know, that they don't have a listing of any kind of folks that are using well water instead of being on the city water system. So I need to get that out to everyone. And then on as far as announcements, I know we got two car shows this week, two cruise-ins. We can have one of them over in Tompkinsville. We'll give them a shout out. That since it's for the, I think the Tompkinsville High School band over at the high school on Saturday morning, and then on Saturday afternoon, just you know, keep your car all nice and shiny and come over to the here to the historic Clay County Courthouse Square, where the Canton Lodge here is doing their second cruise into the summer, beginning at 3:00. And I know that they're planning on doing maybe one more cruise in and a big car show down in October. So we've got that activity going on here. And let's see what else we have gotten going on. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
I've made a list of some things here. I don't know. We want to talk about marbles a little bit this morning?
Well, we can definitely always do that.
And I know we're just completing, closing out our Roly-Hole Marbles grant from the Tennessee Arts Commission, and got our paperwork all in, and we have been working diligently on that. And I don't know what all we can talk. We can talk about a whole lot of things, but you know, some of the things that we need is help and assistance from anyone that you know has any type of artifact, any type of pictures, videos, things like that, that would be suitable to be placed in the Roly-Hole Marble Museum. And of course, we're in the process. Actually, we've just moved our radio station area over into another room down here. We're in the process of turning the the two adjoining rooms across the hall from us into the museum. Kevin, I know we have a projected time of having some materials up and ready, which is pretty close on us, and that is for the first weekend in August.
Well, my hat's off to you, Thomas, too, for procuring a lot of needed materials for the museum here in the last few days. I've been looking, but I've not had much luck. You've had a lot of luck. Of course, we needed, among other things, display cases. You know, you display things, obviously, and we've got more to display than what we're probably going to have room for initially, but you've got to have some way of displaying them, and you've made a couple of really nice hauls and had a donation for one of those. Didn't even have to spend any money, right, for one of those bigger cases.
Yes, we did. I know that one. We decided early on, you know, with the history of the marble game here and the significance it played, that it would be, you know, kind of proper if we tried to secure some of the showcases from the old grocery stores, hardware stores here in and around this area. And as you said, we have received one tremendous donation of an 8-foot old showcase that came out of the Argus Roten grocery store.
Right.
And a whole lot of folks probably have never heard of that before. But I think it was located over on the Bowl, where you turned it into the Bowles Road over there, from the Tompkinsville side there.
Well, think about how much times have changed from the days when there was a general store and a schoolhouse, which also, in many instances, doubled as a church. You know, every wide place in the road had a considerable store, and again, that school/church that was there, and of all the display cases that were in all those, but that's it's a relic of the past now.
Yeah, I know.
It's hard to believe.
We found one online, had to go up to Jamestown, Tennessee to pick it up. I believe the owner that had it now said he bought it at a sale up in Kentucky somewhere or another.
Right.
But it actually came from a store down in somewhere, a country store down in Georgia. But, you know, we could sit here and just kind of reminisce about the county and the county grocery store, the little stores out in the country. We think one at Pine Hill. You know, basically, I think when we look back through the history of the county, where there was a crossroads of a dirt road and a blacktop road or whatever, there was a grocery store there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I always think about the schools that were attached to that. You know, it's unbelievable now because we have, we're down to three schools in the county, two elementary schools that feed into Clay County High School. I have read in some of the old Bill Fisk Bugle and other places, and I know you have too, I believe the biggest number that I have seen, of elementary schools in Clay County was that there was 65 at one time, and I'm not saying there wasn't more than that, but I'm pretty sure I've seen that number. And, you know, as recently as up into the 30s and 40s, of course, that's been a while now, doesn't seem possible. There were still well up into the 40s of elementary schools, and those were, along with our country stores, were the, here's my 25-cent word for the day, the vestiges of communities. Yeah, and we've kind of lost that sense of community to some degree, and no doubt about it. But think of all those stores, and I don't remember a lot of them, but I remember driving past a lot of them as a youngster. Yeah, these stores were everywhere. And of course, we had one close fairly recently at what we've always called the three-way inn, you know, Cherry's
right.
Grocery might have been one of the last of those type stores, in a sense, that we had that dated back a long time.
Well, you know, it was, I guess really and truly something, it was maybe one of the later ones. I think that actually opened up by members of the Gass family out there as a restaurant when it first opened. And then
it would have been one of the younger ones. It would kind of been, could we say, second generation, maybe.
Yeah.
But it goes back a long way. I remember talking to William. That store was there. And then his dad, am I remembering that right? His dad had the store before
his
that?
His uncle.
Uncle.
His
okay.
uncle that had that. That would have been Travis and Hugh Tim's mother and father.
Okay.
Been on that for many, many years. And, of course, the characters that run the stores. You know, I can go back and I think of Mr. Bill Cherry there, and I know he came up with this tremendous idea that he would fix a gas pump there. He had a pair of gas pumps over in front of the store. Then there's a little island out there where the highway separates now, and he put him a gas pump out there. Well, he never thought that there'd be any dishonest people in Clay County that would come up there and fill those things up. But you know, there's all kinds of neat stories that went around about that. I know I can the story when two ladies came in and he had back when candy bars were a nickel, and he told me, you know, he said, ladies, I've got a special on candy bars today. He said, they're not a nickel a piece, but you can get five for a quarter. And so, but you know, and then of course, he was kind of known as a stingy person, I think, and I can remember a story, you know, back in the day when we collected Coke bottles. Somebody started a story that Bill was in the hospital. What happened? Well, a car run over him. Said, somebody throwed a Coke bottle out on the side of the road. He ran out there to try to get it, and they hit him.
Well, and that's the thing about that. In today's throwaway society, that things were actually recycled with the retailer or the wholesaler. You know, we talk about recycling plastic and cardboard and paper and all that now, but yeah, people held on to anything. And your milk containers, the bottles.
Right.
You know, I mean, you set them outside for when they came back again the next week. And I can even remember milk being delivered to, the house I'm about to move back into after all these years, my parents' house.
Well, no, if you remember, you know, now, like in our school cafeterias and most places, you got the little cardboard boxes that you finally get open and squeeze out where you can drink out of them or pour the milk out. But we remember back in the day when milk came in little 8-ounce bottles.
Oh, yeah.
With a little pull-off tab on top. I think I've got one of those antique bottles laying around somewhere or another. But then also, you know, we had things here. We're talking about the milk thing. We had things here where the farmers actually delivered milk to folks here in Salina.
Oh, yeah.
Where they would fill the bottles up themselves and bring raw milk in and deliver it to people here in Salina.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, that milk that was, and I'm sure there was cheese included in that equation, don't know for sure, I'm pretty certain that Mr. Will Terry was our milk delivery person. I believe I'm remembering that. Right. Of course, they had the big farm, you know, up
right
around the lake area. But, yeah, I think how much times have changed when plastic and cardboard came into being.
Well, you know, and I remember another one of the grocery stores, the Roberts Brothers store out at Pine Hill, one of the gathering places where folks gathered on many afternoons. Well, and at a lot of these, like the businesses here in Salina, were actually like country stores that happened to be in town, Kirkpatrick's.
Oh, like, yeah, right across the
right
street.
Right across the road here that's been here for years and years and years. But, and you know, and along with the schools, I think years ago when I designed the school website, that there were at the time that Clay County got the first high school here, the county approved high school when they went to public education, that there were actually at that time, I believe, 16 elementary schools here, and there was schools at Pine Hill, Moss, Union Hill, New Hope, Baptist Ridge. One called at Hong Kong. I don't know how that name came about. Up at the lake at Pleasant Grove, there was a school up there.
And Thomas at
Brimstone.
Right. At that time, those would have been not publicly funded, but basically private schools.
Right.
Am I thinking right?
Yeah, before that, you know, all those earlier schools where people started their own schools. You know, public education came about, I guess,
I'm thinking it was the 19-teens in Tennessee, around 1920
And best I can remember, I think I was maybe in first or second grade when free textbooks came along with Governor Frank Clement. That was one of the things that he promised when he was elected, and you started getting your textbooks. Before that, even when we had the public schools, you had to buy your own books.
Right.
And Of course, if you were lucky and had older brothers and sisters, they didn't have to buy their set for everybody.
And that might not have been possible for a lot of folks.
No, you know, that was a thing.
In those days.
And, you know, there was a... Well, let's take a little short break, come back, and I like this conversation, Kevin. We may wander in off everywhere.
There's no
good. We'll be right back.
Salina Lumber Company gives you the convenience of a big box store with its thousands of items, but with a small town feel. At this family-owned home improvement store, they treat you like family. They have thousands of items in stock and can order so much more upon request. Their departments include appliances, automotives, building materials, cleaning supplies, doors and windows, electrical, farm and ranch, fasteners, hand tools, hardware, heating and cooling, lawn and garden, lighting, lumber, mowers, outdoor living, outdoor power equipment, paint, pet supplies, plumbing, power tools, sporting goods, store supplies, and tools. Many name brands and products are stocked at Salina Lumber Company, located at 1223 Mitchell Street in Salina, Tennessee. They're open on Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday 7 a.m. to 2 p.m., and closed on Sunday. That's Salina Lumber Company, 1223 Mitchell Street in Salina, Tennessee.
Identity theft is the fastest growing crime in America, and fraud is a threat to all of us. That's why Macon Bank & Trust SecureLock makes great sense. This easy-to-use mobile app allows you to protect your debit card, turning it on and off as needed. And you can customize your card by setting certain permissions. Want to know more about how to protect yourself and your money? Then talk with us today. Macon Bank & Trust, member FDIC and equal housing lender. Come grow with us.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness, with a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists. They serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skill, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
Tri-County Electric offers their member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
What is a quitter? A person who gives up easily. The thought of quitting tobacco products might seem hard, but it's not impossible. With the help of the Tennessee Tobacco Quitline Program, you will have a quit coach, personalized support, and even free nicotine replacement therapy for eligible participants. Tobacco users that enroll in Tennessee Tobacco Quitline Program have access to specially trained tobacco quit coaches who will work with you to develop a personalized plan for quitting tobacco and provide you with ongoing support along the way. So you will become a quitter, a person who does not give up easily. And once you become a quitter, within minutes of having your last cigarette, your body begins a series of changes that provide immediate health benefits, like reduced heart rate. If you or someone you know wants to quit using tobacco, call the Tennessee Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW. That's 1-800-784-8669. This message is brought to you by Clay County Anti-Drug Coalition. This project is funded under a grant contract with the State of Tennessee Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services.
Welcome back, everyone. Once again, sitting here with Kevin Donaldson this morning, and we'd kind of wandered off on our old schools here, and I guess I'm sitting here, and I may be one of the fewer ones left in the county that actually started at school in a one-room school with one teacher. Over at what is now the New Hope Church building, which was actually built by, I guess, by my McLaren ancestors, the land donated and everything, to be used in all future times as a church house and a school.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this was about, golly, 1948, 49, somewhere along in there.
Now, where did you all live then?
We lived over on Highway 52.
Okay.
And we, a lot of times in good weather, we would actually walk. It's a pretty good little trip. We'd walk over through the woods and walk over to the schoolhouse. You know, in those days, you know, the school buses, there were school buses, but a lot of the drivers would run, you know, two routes in the morning and in the afternoon also. And our bus route going to New Hope, usually the bus would come by and get the kids going to New Hope, and we would be over at the school building by about 7 o'clock in the morning. And the teacher usually didn't make it there until about 10 minutes till 8.
Right.
So we were there, and it was kind of our responsibility to start the fire sometimes and keep the coal or the wood put in the fire. And then the school bus in the afternoon, sometimes it would be like 4:30 before they came in and you know, picked us up to take us home on the bus. And in good weather, you know, we weren't real brilliant, mind. We figured we could walk home in about 15 minutes instead of waiting until 4:30.
Right.
So a lot of us, you know, and I think a lot of the schools in the county here were, even the so-called, I guess they were semi-public schools that were founded by families and things, that, you know, they would be built close enough to where basically all the students would have walking access to a place of education.
And a rare one might have had a horse or a mule to be able to ride, might have doubled up with somebody.
And I think there are some historic pictures of children riding to school in a horse-drawn or a mule-drawn wagon.
Oh,
where they
yeah.
would have seats on it, kind of like a stage, not like a stagecoach, but an uncovered wagon that had benches on it, and they would pick up students on a route. And, of course, I think the parents would pay maybe 25 or 50 cents a month to get their kids hauled to school. So, you know, we had ways of getting back and forth, but, you know, it was a community time. I think most of the time when you went to one of those schools, everybody there was either a cousin or something or other, and it was very, very, very common for all of the schools we had.
Oh, yeah. Well, just think about how many teachers it took, you know, to make. Of course, they were, most of them were one teacher schools or whatever. But still, to have that many people, you know, I've read some of the old things in the. We'll head down another little road here, tied in, I think, with the history of Montvale and some early education. You know, the teacher had a lot of responsibility, and they had to furnish a lot of their own. Stuff. For example, I'm pretty sure I remember that they were expected to have coal there or wood or whatever. The teacher took care of that. Am I remembering right?
Yeah.
Probably. And it, you know, they had a lot of what we might think of as custodial or maintenance responsibilities in addition to teaching 8 different grades.
And I also, in the county in those days, Kevin mentioned Montvale Academy, which was considered a classic school. And I think we had, I know, of at least 2 and probably maybe 4 of those so-called classic academies here in Clay County. And those were schools that taught everything from Latin to different types of theory.
Well, I remember one that the first time I saw it, I had to look it up to see what it was. I remember seeing I forget who gave me access to that document or whatever, but some of the early Montvale curriculum things, pedagogy. I had to look that up. Now, I know what it is now, you know, and that is basically the art and philosophy of teaching. I had no earthly idea. I'd never heard that word till I wrote that story. But, yeah, it wasn't uncommon at all for him to learn some Latin and maybe even some Greek. And think about how much education has changed. But that's part of what I guess you call the old classic liberal arts curriculum, where you got a little bit of everything and very classic stuff.
Right, and also, I guess, I don't know how unusual it was, but Montvale was a mixed-sex school. young ladies and young men right. went to school there. And I know we had the other class down in Butler's Landing. I can't think.
Was it Philomath?
Yes, and that was down in Tinsley's Bottom.
Right.
Down there, also one of these. And, you know, if you look back at the folks that started these schools, were usually, a lot of them were, I think some of them, even Harvard-educated people.
Oh, yeah.
That were here in Clay County and started a school. And I know Moses Fisk, I think he was educated at one of the major schools. You know, he started Fisk Academy for girls.
That was for young ladies,
yeah,
right.
And that, of course, that was part, you know, that's back when Clay County was part of Overton County. And I know we had all of those around. And the opportunity for education was there. You know, most of the time, though, when a student, I guess in those days, based on what knowledge was needed and to be a successful person, most of the students that were educated in those days, that once they finished the eighth grade, their level of what they needed to know to earn a living, a whole lot of times might even be compatible or comparable to what a four-year college degree would be today, based on, you know, the different scientific things, all the different inventions and all that stuff that have happened since then. You know, just comparing what they were working with and the day of the time, that education was a tremendous education if they would make it through that eighth grade. And then if they went to Montvale Academy or some of the, well, I know at Montvale Academy we had Cordell Hull, who graduated down there, who became, you know, a state representative, senator, lawyer here in Clay County
Secretary
at age 18,
State. Yeah.
And was in national politics. And then he received his education up until law school here at Montvale Academy. And also, we had a governor, Benton McMillan,
who was actually family.
Up in
right.
the just across the line up in Kentucky.
Now, wouldn't one of the McMillan family, one of the higher-ups or the superintendent or the headmaster at Montvale, am I remembering
right? One time,
it may be Benton's brother or something. But
yeah,
rich history with Montvale and politics in addition to education.
You know, and I do know that when Dixie University, when that idea came up in the state legislature for, you know, for the public post-high school education facilities, that there was tremendous consideration of Montvale Academy actually becoming the home building of Dixie University, which eventually became Tennessee Tech. And I think
it was TPI. Excuse me, it was TPI before Tennessee Tech.
And then Dixie College before that.
Well, you just think what a change in fortune there might have been if Salina and Clay County had been home to a full-fledged four-year college.
And I, you know, we kind of lost that. I guess it was the Maddox family over in Cookeville that had more political power than anyone in Clay County did, in which that, you know, sometimes the story. And it was finally settled upon to have Dixie College open there in Putnam County. But, you know, there are so many stories like that of what if and that type of thing.
Stories or legends. I'm not sure how to separate them sometimes.
Sometimes it is kind of hard. But, you know, it's interesting to, you know, to read about the what ifs, you know, here in Clay County. I know if right now you're driving around and you go between here and Livingston, you will see that there are signs there telling you that the road from here to, over toward Hillham is part of the city highway, which is another story there that throw out here, that when it came time to build the Y2 facility that developed the atomic bomb, the first site that was proposed was by Cordell Hull to build it in the woodlands between Hillham and Allens, Tennessee.
Right.
And that was, I mean, it came, like, I guess, within one vote of that happening. But I think one of the major drawbacks to that was that if you come in and build a big facility like that out in the middle of nowhere, that some of the Nazi spies might figure out something's going on there if you didn't there. So you kind of, you know, being closer to a larger city, metropolitan area where you could be hidden a little bit better, kind of changed that vote a little bit. But, you know, all those things are things that it's great to sit around and kind of reminisce about I know as an old history teacher that some of those things that it's hard to imagine what might have happened, what if.
Absolutely. And I know we probably need to go to a break, but if we can continue that conversation about the Y2 after the break.
Okay.
I've got something to throw in there.
We'll be right back in just a minute.
Salina Lumber Company gives you the convenience of a big box store with its thousands of items, but with a small town feel. At this family-owned home improvement store, they treat you like family. They have thousands of items in stock and can order so much more upon request. Their departments include appliances, automotives, building materials, cleaning supplies, doors and windows, electrical, farm and ranch, fasteners, hand tools, hardware, heating and cooling, lawn and garden, lighting, lumber, mowers, outdoor living, outdoor power equipment, paint, pet supplies, plumbing, power tools, sporting goods, store supplies, and tools. Many name brands and products are stocked at Salina Lumber Company, located at 1223 Mitchell Street in Salina, Tennessee. They're open on Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday 7 a.m. to 2 p.m., and closed on Sunday. That's Salina Lumber Company, 1223 Mitchell Street in Salina, Tennessee.
Macon Bank and Trust offers a new and better checking account with free e-checking. Enroll for e-statements to avoid a $6 monthly minimum balance charge and enjoy free ATM cash withdrawals at some ATMs across the nation. Free online banking and mobile banking with mobile deposit. Free online bill pay, MasterCard debit card, and 50 free checks at opening. Talk e-checks with us today. Macon Bank and Trust, member FDIC, and equal housing lender. Come grow with us. Third-party data or messaging fees may apply.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness. With a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists, they serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skilled, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
Tri-County Electric offers their member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
What is a quitter? A person who gives up easily. The thought of quitting tobacco products might seem hard, but it's not impossible. With the help of the Tennessee Tobacco Quitline Program, you will have a quit coach, personalized support, and even free nicotine replacement therapy for eligible participants. Tobacco users that enroll in Tennessee Tobacco Quitline Program have access to specially trained tobacco quit coaches who will work with you to develop a personalized plan for quitting tobacco and provide you with ongoing support along the way. So you will become a quitter, a person who does not give up easily. And once you become a quitter, within minutes of having your last cigarette, your body begins a series of changes that provide immediate health benefits, like reduced heart rate. If you or someone you know wants to quit using tobacco, call the Tennessee Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW. That's 1-800-784-8669. This message is brought to you by Clay County Anti-Drug Coalition. This project is funded under a grant contract with the State of Tennessee Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services.
Welcome back, everyone. Before we start back, this would be a good time, I guess, to read off our birthday and anniversary list here today. And beginning with celebrating a birthday, it's Donna Brown Gower. Happy birthday to her. Mr. Lonnie Donaldson, celebrating a birthday. And we've got maybe a couple from the week before since we missed last week. Miss Carolyn Hayes, celebrating a birthday. Then we have an anniversary here in this list, David and Carolyn Browning. And then we have, I think, four ladies here. I think there's four of them, maybe five of them, that all celebrate their birthday on the same day. And that was on, I think it was June the 5th. That was Brenda Likens, Lois Brown, Juanita Gass, Rose Browning, and Mary Ann Hamilton. These ladies, I think they all get together to celebrate their birthday every year. And then also we got another wedding anniversary, and that's Margie and Donnie Boone. And then another one of those, Travis and Shirley Cherry. And then Miss Zoe Hayes, celebrating a birthday this week. So we'd like to wish all them a happy birthday. And here toward the end of the show, we'll be giving away one of our wonderful birthday prizes. Well, Kevin, I think maybe you had a couple of thoughts there that hit you there all at once.
Well, we're talking about what wound up being the Oak Ridge National Laboratory in the early thought stages of that, you know, the possibility of it being in the Hillham or Allen's area. You know, there's been a story that's circulated for years, and I don't know that this has a basis, a factual basis, but it's a story that's been told, that the reason it did not come here but went to Oak Ridge was because the U.S. Speaker of the House, who was at that time Sam Rayburn, he held that position, I think, maybe longer than anybody ever did, from Texas, had some kind of a connection with the Oak Ridge area. Now, I don't know if that may be we can't call it an urban legend, we'll call it a rural legend or not, but it's been told many times.
Best I remember it was Senator McAllister, I believe, and it was all maybe tied in, too, with the TVA project and some of those things. But, and I do know that best I can find out on that one by doing some research is that the actual reason to begin the construction of Dale Hollow Dam was to furnish electricity to the secret city.
I've heard that same story.
I think that was probably the thing about that. And I know, of course, it was. The excuse used was, you know, it was for flood control. And
which was definitely needed.
Absolutely. You know, of course, that all started with the TVA project, which was to control the Tennessee River and the flooding on it, and then they backed on up to the little creeks to slow them down. And so, you know, that's been a savior for us over the years. I can't imagine just this past week when we got that, what, 3 or 4 inches of rain here in just a few hours, what that would have done without, you know, holding back all the water in our dam up in Kentucky and the one here in Tennessee.
You know, Thomas, as something else comes to mind is we're talking about all these things that happened 100 years ago or maybe more than 100 years ago. When you revisit that, you know, we see all this difference in size of our towns now. You know, people probably don't realize it, but for example, Livingston is 3 times as big as Salina. Lafayette is similarly sized. And of course, Cookeville is a very big area. But you know, 100 years ago, we were all very much closer. You know, Cookeville's always been bigger and some, but there wasn't the population disparity between the a lot of the towns and the counties that there is now. You know, Putnam County's got way over 10 times as many people as Clay County's got. But 100 years ago, I believe I'm safe in saying that was not the case. We were all closer.
You know what? At that point in time, we were probably there for a few years. We were probably the number one commercial area in this whole Upper Cumberland area with the river traffic here.
Because of this body of water about, what, a quarter of a mile?
Right. You know, if you look through, you can, if you want to look in the statistics enough, you can find statistics about how many tons of these things, how many bushels of corn, the lumber, the number of millions of feet of lumber that floated down the river from here in Salina, the things that came upriver. And I know an interesting thing that Mr. Johnny McLaren told me a while back, that the number one agricultural product that went up the river from here to Salina up to Kentucky was poultry. And I said, well, it hadn't changed.
No.
But now we're taking it up by semis instead of up.
did that same direction.
if you look at the report of the attack on the city of Salina during the Civil War, you will notice then that how many tons that they supposedly destroyed of tobacco and all of these kind of things by bombing over here. Of course, we retaliated them. I don't think we didn't have a courthouse during the Civil War, but they did. So we went over there and burned their courthouse for
right.
them. But and looking back through history, one of the first, one of the first white men to come through here was Daniel Boone.
I think that's pretty well established.
Yeah, his party came through, and I think if you're familiar with down at the Butler's Landing boat dock or landing place down there, that where the two creeks come together before they go into the Cumberland River, he actually camped on that point there.
Right.
He, from his notes, that was where he went on up into Kentucky. But I think there's just so much history here, and there are just so many things. But, I've got some more notes here. We want to talk about our marbles a little bit. The game of roly-hole marbles, it was
unique to our area.
Unique to our area. And, of course, we really don't know how it came about, where it came from. But it was one of those times, I guess, when most games that you played, we had baseball teams and things like that here, but you had to have equipment, uniforms, and all those things. But all four country boys out on the farm needed to play marbles was four marbles, and they made their own flint marbles, and a piece of ground, about 20 by 40 foot with three holes in the ground, and they could have a highly competitive game there.
And Thomas, we think that it's only, and it is still largely only played in Clay County, Tennessee, and Monroe County, Kentucky, but I'm getting a feel that maybe the sport's moving out a little bit into some of our surrounding counties here. Of course, the big championship each year is held at Standing Stone State Park, so Overton County has been introduced to the game for the last, about 40 years that the roly-hole world championship's been held. It's right at 40 years, I guess.
1983.
Okay. Well,
that'd make it about 40 years ago.
Absolutely.
I think 1983 was the first one. With some of the material we've gathered here, I believe that's the first one of those.
Thomas, I'll never forget. I guess this drove home a point to me about the appeal of roly-hole marbles, not necessarily as for people to participate in the sport, but how rustic and old-timey it's viewed by so many people in different places. We've had National Geographic here. We've had Charles Kuralt here. We've had Illustrated here, and on and on and on. And they always approach the game from a folksy standpoint, where there's grown men getting down in the dirt and playing a game. I'll never forget when we were in the early stages of doing some promotional videos here for the county that the state did for us, free gratis, as the old saying goes, too. And when they found out about roly-hole marbles, they were the folks who were helping with this production or doing it were just, they just fell in love with it. Even in our general one that wasn't about roly-hole marbles, roly-hole marbles was featured in that from the opening spot. But it is a very rustic game, an appealing game, especially to, I guess, some folks in the city who don't experience a game like that. They may know what a marble is and may play the old marbles game where you just put them all in a ring and the ones you knock out are yours. And, of course, everybody around here's played that too, but that's not really what we consider to be the main marble game. It's a factor, and it's played and played well by a lot of folks, but roly-hole is the king.
And, the thing about it, there's a name I'll throw out. If you're listening and you want to put this name down and you have access to your computer, and that is Mr. Bob Fulcher. And his last name is spelled F-U-L-C-H-E-R. He is, I guess, if there's anyone responsible for the resurgence and the popularity of where this is today, he was hired basically out of college by the Conservation Parks Department, the state of Tennessee. And one of the first things that he did was he went around to, I know we've heard of these people, folks that went around and recorded local musicians, you know, primitive musicians, the fiddle players and all. He recorded those all over the state of Tennessee to begin with. And as he was doing some of those things, he ran into this thing here in Clay County about marbles. And I guess along about the early 1980s, he started writing articles about the marble game in Clay County. And he continued doing that and, you know, bringing in the publicity. And we had numerous colleges that got involved in it, that did studies on it. And they're still out there. Some of them are kind of hard to find. And there are lots of videos out there where they came around in the early 80s. But then in 1986, he was mainly responsible for a group of folks from Clay County, Tennessee, that went to the Smithsonian Institute on the Mall in Washington, D.C. in 1986.
Right.
And that group included, I know at least four marble players, and there may have been more, and that they built a marble yard there on the they're on the Mall. Of course, the marble players, they didn't like the dirt up in Washington, D.C. It wasn't like playing on Tennessee dirt.
Right.
But about the only history we have of that is audio recordings of that. And I know we have one recording of an audio game where Mr. Bob Fulcher was doing the play-by-play on, like, on radio, which is not really exciting, but we have that. But we actually sent, in the group, Mr. Ralph Roberts went, I think Russell Collins, I'm trying to think of some of the others, Bud Garrett went as, he went as a marble maker, and I'm trying to think of the other guys. I should have made some notes on this, but there was a group of those folks who went up there. But also, Mr. Garrett, he went up there as a marble maker, and he was also scheduled to talk about his homemade barbecue, and his wife, they requested her to take her quilting quilts up there, handmade quilts. And there are some of those that are still on display up there.
And you know, Thomas, Bobby hasn't worked here in this area for at least 35 years, but he knows everybody and everybody knows him.
And he
comes to Rolly Hall.
And he says he's coming back August the 5th and do a little presentation here in the courthouse.
Right. Well, just limiting him down to whatever the time slot is would be the difficult thing, because he could talk all day.
Yeah, and I know I mentioned to him that we were, you know, kind of resurrecting the marble yard up at Donaldson Park, which we're working on right now. And we're going to be holding a marble tournament up there. It's going to be the Kentucky Headhunters King of Marbles tournament. And, of course, their name is synonymous with Rolly Hole Marbles, with their song, Let's All Go Down to Dumas Walker.
Right.
And I know when I told him that, he said, oh, my goodness, said, finally, we're going to be playing marbles out under trees. And that was the thing that, you know, so impressed him. I know he went up to Mr. Amos McLaren's marble yard. They shot a film up there one night where they came in and got a bunch of the local men playing and talking about marbles. And all these things, we're going to have all these things here in the Rolly Hole Museum.
Absolutely.
Where people can come by and look at them and do those things. Kevin, how much time we got left?
Well, we've got about 6 minutes, I'd say.
Well, we still got a few more minutes then. I was trying to look through here. I know looking up at the park, I think we've got some things planned up there. I think they've got looking on doing a tennis tournament maybe up there. And I think maybe they turned the first shovel of dirt on the splash pad up there this week.
A lot going on.
Yes, there is. And like I said, we're working on the marble yard up there to get it resurrected and out and use it. And we just, and another thing, along the line of the Marble Museum, if anyone listening out there, I know probably everyone listening out there, somewhere in a drawer of their home, they've got a flint marble. And we, you know, if anyone has anything they would like to loan here to the Marble Museum and put it on exhibit and let everybody see it. But I know so many of these things are prized family possessions.
Oh, yeah.
That you're very protective of. But, you know, that is something we would love to have here and give, you know, credit to the folks, the marble makers, you know, you marble makers out there. We've got lots and lots of folks that are doing that. And I think we have a couple of young ladies that just received a grant this year to make marbles. And that are Kaylee Strong's two daughters.
What?
I think I saw that listing the other day that they've received some stuff from the Arts Commission to on where they're going to be making some marbles. But I know we have various ones, and anyone that would like to donate, if you've got one of the old marble making machines, I know we're going to have us a new one here, and we're trying to get a copy of or the actual machine that Bud Garrett came up with first. So we got, you know, his name is pretty well synonymous with a lot of this, and of course he has lots and lots of publicity, lots of tradition with him, with his traditional blues music, which has made him, after his death, into an international celebrity,
right,
with about his music. And I know we have, he did about, I don't know, 8 or 10 live shows at the Smithsonian where he managed to talk himself on the stage and have his banter on over. He was introduced and his banter back and forth between him and Bob Fulcher, which is some neat stuff. We're going to have some recordings of that. But anyone that has anything to do with marbleture and clay or Monroe County that you would like to see exhibited here in the courthouse for a month, 2 months, a year, or whatever, you know, let us know here at the courthouse, and we'll take care of it and properly display it and give you credit for it. And I know it's something we hope to have up and going by that first weekend in August. We're going to have something for you to come in and look at.
Well, that's something about a museum that maybe we forget from time to time. A museum is not a firm, fixed, static thing. A museum has to change occasionally to keep it interesting. So, yeah, the things that we start out with here in, well, less than 2 months now will not be the things that are in there forever. There'll be some common elements. You'll be able and need to rotate stuff in and out all the time. Like I say, if you want to just loan us something for a couple of months or for whatever length of time you want it back, that's not an issue at all.
And we're also looking, I know, at instituting a Rolly Ho Marbles Hall of Fame plaque. And, you know, if you have some suggestions and ideas on some of the old-time marble players, that, you know, we would love to have that. And we will have a group put together that will, you know, have an initial class of that here in the very, very near future. And, you know, and one of the things that I throw out here, one of the court cases here in Clay County was the Grover Jones murder trial. And as a fairly young man, not even a man, and I probably wasn't 21 years old, but 18 maybe, I can remember when that was first broadcast here, and one of the most memorable things that I can remember from that was that we had a young cub reporter standing on the square here across from the courthouse, and he introduced himself that first night. He said, "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Walter Cronkite. I'm reporting to you from the across the street from the from the Clay County Courthouse, where we're fixing to have a murder trial of Mr. Grover Jones, and I just happen to be in Salina, Tennessee, which is the most godforsaken, forlorn country, state, city, what I have ever been in my life." And that is how he opened it up.
Well, from New York City, I guess that was his perspective of things. Well,
Kevin, let's see, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. A number between 1 and 11.
Let's go with 4.
Number 4. That looks like David and Carolyn Browning. You have won the birthday prize today, and you can thank Juanita for calling your name in on that.
Congratulations.
And she did call her own name in this time.
Right.
But with that, I guess it's about time we shut the doors here and got on with the day and get some stuff done in and around here, and just remind folks we got the crews in here this Saturday afternoon, and we'll remind everyone too to go up to Tompkinsville and support the band up there at the high school for that one up there. And with that, I guess we'll shut the doors here, get everything put away, and may the good Lord bless and keep you until we meet you again. And hopefully we'll meet you again here on WVFB 101.5 Kicks Country, live each Thursday morning, pre-recorded at 6 o'clock tonight. And with that, good day, Clay County.
Thanks for being with us today for the Clay County Corner on Kicks Country. We thank all of our interesting guests, and we thank all of our fine sponsors. Our sponsors take pride in and care about our community. So when the need arises, make sure you visit them, or just give them a call and tell them thanks for sponsoring the Clay County Corner. So until next Thursday morning at 9, we hope you have a great week.